This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Later this hour, we're talking with the political director of an organization that aims to end the disenfranchisement and discrimination of ex-convicts and ex-felons, most recently by supporting a state constitutional amendment that would restore their voting rights. But first, industrial hemp is a cannabis sativa plant that contains extremely low levels of THC. That's the psychoactive chemical found in much higher levels in the marijuana that people smoke and eat. Hemp has been grown as a source of fiber and grain for at least 10,000 years. Here in the U.S., it dates all the way back to the early days of colonial America. Farmers grew it to make rope and other canvas products, as well as pulp to make paper. George Washington even wrote about growing hemp on his farmlands. But hemp was effectively made illegal in the 1930s with the passage of the Marijuana Tax Act, which made possession or transport of marijuana illegal in the U.S. under federal law. But as full THC marijuana is beginning to find its place in the worlds of medicine and recreation, attention is being once again turned to hemp as an industrial product. More than 30 states have industrial hemp projects, and now Florida is joining them with a new pilot research project by the University of Florida. It's going to explore the economic viability of hemp as a cash crop. We're joined now by Dr. Robert Gilbert. He's a professor and chair of the agronomy department at the University of Florida. He joins us from Gainesville to give us an overview of what this pilot project seeks to accomplish. Dr. Gilbert, thanks so much for your time today.
Well, you're very welcome, Julie. It's a pleasure to join you today.
And as always, we would like to hear from you, the listener, to ask a question or make a comment. Give us a call now at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCO. So first, can you start with an explanation of what has kept researchers from working with hemp until now? Or what's changed or is changing to make this possible?
Right. Thank you. We gave an excellent introduction, Julie, about the history of the crop and the differentiation between hemp and marijuana and the low THC levels. And really, the Farm Bill legislation recently enabled states that then passed their own state legislation to allow different land-grant universities to conduct research on industrial hemp. And that just happened last year in Florida. And so the state has passed legislation allowing the University of Florida to conduct research on hemp. And now we have a lot of different logistical hurdles to overcome to do that research. But at least we're able to start that process today.
So you got their authorizations then from the state after the state got the authorizations from the federal government?
Correct. And now there's other authorizations that we have to get, for example, from the UF Board of Trustees, which we achieved last month. And now we have to get authorization from the Drug Enforcement Administration. And then finally, when we have that, we can get a planting permit from the Florida Department of Agricultural and Consumer Sciences to do the research.
That's a lot of work. I mean, and this
it is a very logistically challenging crop to work on, but it's important from the state. I'll state that we have had more growers and other parties contact me interested in participating with us in this research than I can recall in the last few years. There's a lot of interest in hemp. You mentioned that has multiple uses. You're getting Bob Clayton in to talk about hempcrete, for example, later on this hour. There's fiber and also medical uses from cannabidiol or CBD oil. So it's a multi-purpose plant. Growers are interested and innovative in Florida in pursuing it. So that's why we're undertaking the project.
Well, there are a lot of hurdles in the way there. But so what's the basic overview of how the pilot project is going to be structured?
Right. So hemp is grown in different areas around the world. But what we have to determine is what varieties will grow well where in Florida. And so we're going to import 30 or so different varieties from different locations and test them in our different Florida environments, from Hempstead up to the panhandle of Florida. In addition to looking at different varieties and how well they do here, we're going to look at different management practices. If you're growing hemp for fiber as opposed to CBD oil, you're going to manage it differently. So we need to determine how best to manage it. And finally, Florida expends a lot of resources each year managing invasive plants. And so we want to make sure it doesn't become an invasive risk through spread by seed, for example. So that's the third research goal, is how to reduce invasive risk of the plant.
Well, it is a weed, and things that grow like a weed kind of grow like a weed.
Correct.
So can you just kind of break it down for me, because I'm not really a botanist. We're talking about hemp. Is it the same thing as marijuana but grown differently to have less of the psychoactive component?
Yes.
Or is it a different kind of plant? Are we looking at like a yellow daisy versus a red daisy?
Right. It's the same species as marijuana, right? Cannabis sativa. But I tell people that a Great Dane and toy poodle are the same species of dog, yet they're very different in terms of their development. And hemp, as you mentioned, it's been grown for 10,000 years as a fiber crop. So it's been selected for that purpose for many, many generations, right? And so it has low THC. Even though it looks a lot like marijuana, if you're going to manage it for medical marijuana, it would be in a greenhouse setting, very well controlled, as opposed to producing it out in the field for fiber with an industrial hemp crop. So it's managed differently, and the genetics of it are different.
Mm-hmm. And it would be very disappointing if you were thinking you were growing marijuana and you were growing hemp instead. I mean, the hemp doesn't
correct.
Work that way.
And I need to mention that we're not working on medical marijuana on
exactly.
this project. And in fact, one of the things we have to do is test for THC and make sure that we're not exceeding the 0.3% THC limits for industrial hemp. There have been cases where growers in other states have planted it and they've exceeded that and the crop has had to be destroyed. So we certainly want to do testing and avoid that if at all possible in Florida.
So are you doing this where you mentioned earlier that you were working from testing this plant out in from homestead all the way on up. Are you working with partner farmers or is this being done strictly by researchers in these different areas?
We look at this as a two-phase project, Julie, where at the beginning of this early phase, we're going to be working at our research centers. And we have 13 different research centers around the state. There are three of them that we're targeting right now for the research, and that can expand as we get more resources into the project. The reason we want to do it at our research facilities is we want to take on the economic risk of the project. As I mentioned, we're not sure what varieties would do well in Florida and what might trigger high THC levels in varieties here. So we want to determine that before we make recommendations to growers. I know there are a lot of growers that want to get involved in this project now. However, we need to get more information. And hopefully we'd be allowed in a phase two of the project to open up to on-farm research later on.
Yeah, it's kind of what IFAS does with any agricultural product. You do all the due diligence that would be too expensive for most farmers to take on.
Correct. And our long-term goal is like with other crops. I used to work in sugarcane, for example, in Belgrade, which isn't that far from where you are in Fort Myers. And we have a 100-year partnership with industry there, working with them on everything from varietal development to weed control to different management practices. So we hope to form a partnership with interested parties that will produce a sustainable and profitable hemp industry. I will mention that we're collecting a list of growers and other parties that want to learn more about hemp and our plans, and we want to have a workshop this fall of those interested parties, and we have a list of 75 people already who want to attend the workshop.
How long do you think that this pilot project is going to need to take? Because, it's not like we're dealing with orchards that, a tree that takes many years to show what kind of impacts fruiting is going to have, things like that. With something like this, is it going to be a little bit quicker because it's kind of an annual?
Correct. So we would expect the pilot project to run for 2 years. That's what we're authorized for from the state legislature, to have a 2-year pilot project before we have to submit a report back to the governor. And in agricultural research, we typically like to get multiple years worth of data. Yes, we can harvest each year, but if we have a very wet year, we want to have confidence that we're testing over multiple years before we make recommendations. So we expect the pilot project to last 2 years, and then we'll see where the legislation goes from there.
All right. We are talking about industrial hemp on today's show. The University of Florida is embarking on a new pilot project to explore the economic viability of growing the plant here in the Sunshine State. My guest during this part of the hour is Dr. Robert Gilbert. He is head of the agronomy department at UF. If you'd like to ask a question or make a comment, we'd like to hear from you. Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook. We're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag of GCL. So do you know how water intensive this is as a crop yet? I mean, do we have any ideas of how we think it's going to perform, or are you going to wait until you do all the trials?
Yes, I mean, we have to get more information for Florida. We don't expect it to be very water intensive. It's a typical agronomic crop. We do expect to see differences in different areas around the state. So, for example, we can grow it year-round in Homestead, for example. And so we might plant it in the winter and have several different crops in Homestead, whereas up in the Panhandle, it might only be once a year that we'd be able to get a crop in. So we'll see differences in nutrient water use depending on the number of crops we're able to grow within a year.
Are we kind of starting from ground zero here with this, though, because it's been illegal for so long? Do we have any old records from farms that existed before it being outlawed?
Yeah, so we had some research done in the Everglades agricultural area prior to World War II, indicating that hemp would do well on sandy soils, but wouldn't do as well under flooded conditions in that area, for example, in old research. Unfortunately, those were with old varieties, and we really need to look at what type of genetics we have and what management we can do today with the crop. We expect that it will do well here, but we need to make sure and what varieties, what management practices will be successful.
Mm-hmm. Is there any chance, do you think? I mean, I know it's kind of early to crystal ball this one, but do you feel like hemp could possibly replace citrus as a pretty good cash crop for the state of Florida? Because, I mean, citrus, as we all know, has been going through it.
Correct. Yeah, certainly a lot of our interest is coming from growers, citrus growers that are looking to expand their operations beyond citrus. It's too early to tell how well hemp will do as an economic crop here in Florida. I've certainly had a lot of interest in terms of the economics behind not only the fiber and the construction materials, but also the CBD oil for health uses as well. So it seems to be very promising. And certainly it's our job as a land-grant university to investigate different alternatives for our growers. I mean, we grow 300 different commodities and crops in the state of Florida, so our growers are very innovative. And if anybody can make this work, our growers will be able to do so.
Well, they've been really facing a lot of difficulty, the citrus farmers, especially with the citrus greening. So I can see how anyone would look anywhere to try to maybe replace that and try to get that money coming back in. Do you feel like the state of Florida has been kind of behind on this? It seems like other states have already kind of gone forward with this type of an investigation.
Yes, I mean, I'm glad that the legislation was passed last year that allows us, as you mentioned, there are 30 different states that are looking into this into various levels. I don't think it's too late, however. I think Florida has a comparative advantage here in the market in several ways. One is that, as I mentioned, in Homestead and other areas in South Florida, we could produce the crop year-round and at different times of year than other areas. Also, the market here, as I mentioned, the cannabidiol can be used for medical purposes, for example. And so the market here in Florida would be very strong for that as well.
What kind of products can you make with hemp?
Yes, a lot of different products. So the word cannabis and canvas are related, right, and their etymology. And so sails were made from hemp early on in human history. And then from there, rope and clothing, of course, is made from hemp. Bob Clayton will talk to you about hempcrete in the house that he's made from hemp as a construction material. And then they're looking at it in terms of baby greens for the human consumption market. And there's also interest in medical products such as CBD oil. So it's a very versatile crop.
It is really, really versatile. But when I'm thinking about it as a fiber, am I thinking kind of like of a sisal rug, those rugs that are kind of brown and they're made out of those fibers?
Yes. So I'm not an expert on hemp production yet.
Okay. You're just trying to grow it, right?
Uses you can do with the fiber in terms of clothing and other materials you can make from it.
What does the Florida Department of Agriculture think about industrial hemp?
Yeah, they've been very supportive of the project. We've had meetings with them since the legislation was passed, and we've got a permit. So we had to get a permit from them to put forward our DEA application. And so they gave us a temporary permit to go ahead and get us import permit from the DEA for seed. So we've been working closely with them, and we'll continue to do so for the project.
Does it feel kind of like farmers are sort of depending on the university's pilot project to indicate whether or not commercial hemp growing in our state in a profitable way is even a possibility? I mean, after this project, is that when the state might move forward with allowing farmers to grow it for industrial purposes?
That would be my expectation, that we'd have to do the research and provide a report to the governor, and then also work with our clientele to determine not only the types of varieties we want to grow, but what are the end uses that they want to do with the crop. And so we want to work in partnership with them on evaluating, you know, how they want to use the crop to design the management systems to do that. And so then if there was a phase two, if legislation was approved that allowed the research to go on farm, then we'd like to work with them on farm research with the crop after that.
Are there any political or economic voices that don't support industrial hemp as a possible crop?
Yes, I wouldn't be able to tell you exactly who they are, but I'm certain that there are people that might be concerned, given the fact that it's the same species as marijuana, you know, that it looks like marijuana. And so I think that the onus is on us as a university to make sure the project is well managed, that we educate people that this is not marijuana, this doesn't have THC, the psychoactive compound. That's not what this project is about. It's about providing, you know, sustainable and profitable crop for our growers here that is not, you know, have the psychoactive compounds that marijuana does.
I think it'll be really interesting seeing what you end up finding as far as it being a possible invasive species, too.
Correct. I mean, if you look, you know, at relatives of cannabis throughout the Midwest, for example, you'll see them growing on ditch banks and things over time. So we want to make sure that if there's seed production in the state, that it's not able to spread through seed. Florida, through the water management districts and other state agencies, spends millions of dollars a year in managing invasive plants like Melaleuca, for example, in the state. So we need to make sure that how we're managing it prevents it from spreading.
Exactly. Do you have any final thoughts that you'd like to share with us?
Just that we're really excited about the project. We've gotten a lot of industry support. We have a proposal, which looks like it will get funded soon. And we have others that are interested in funding additional research. So I'd be happy to come back and speak on the show once we have some data and results to discuss. I'd be happy to come back and share them with your viewers.
It'll be interesting to find out what you rediscover, right?
Right. Well, that's our job as a land-grant university, is to do the research and transmit that out to the growers.
All right. Well, thanks so much. That's all the time we have for this part of the show, but I want to thank my guest, Dr. Robert Gilbert, professor and chair of the agronomy department at the University of Florida. Dr. Gilbert, thanks so much for talking with us today.
You're very welcome, Julie. Thank you.
We're going to take a short break, and when we return, we'll continue our conversation on industrial hemp with a man who's advocated for and used industrial hemp to create products and even build a house with what's called hempcrete. I'm Julie Glenn. You're listening to Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us. Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Now that we've gotten an overview from the University of Florida's plans to explore the economic viability of industrial hemp in the Sunshine State, we're joined now by a man who has not only worked as an advocate for its use, but who has used it for a number of different purposes, including building a house with what's called hempcrete. Bob Clayton is a retired mechanical engineer who formed Florida Hemp Processing to fight for hemp in Florida and develop fiber solutions for Florida's farmers. He regularly holds hemp seminars for interested groups and farmers, and he's just started a company called Rewarding Goodness to make food products that contain hemp. Bob, thanks so much for being here.
Hi, thank you, Jim.
What do you think of industrial hemp? Do you think it could be Florida's agricultural future? Give us a call with your thoughts. The number is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So, Bob, when did you first get involved with industrial hemp?
Well, back in 2007, I was taking hemp seed protein powder, and I lost 35 pounds and 8 inches off my waist. So I was looking around for more hemp protein powder, and I learned about hempcrete.
Hemp protein powder.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. And you learned about hempcrete?
Yeah, and in the process of looking around for other sources of protein powder,
yeah.
I had found these articles that you can grow houses out of hempcrete. So, and actually we can. It takes about 3 acres per house. So we could actually grow 1 million houses in Florida on 1% of our cropland.
Yeah, I'm going to have to circle back to that diet plan that you talked about earlier. That's pretty interesting too. That'll be another show. Can you tell me a little bit about what were you thinking when you heard the conversation that we had with Dr. Gilbert earlier, the UF pilot project? What do you think about that?
Oh, well, yeah, I know Dr. very well, and I appreciate his good efforts. That's great. And everything he said was pretty accurate. The research he was talking about was in 1955, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Not before the war, but otherwise, yeah.
That's a review. Do you think that there's going to be a path forward maybe for industrial hemp as a cash crop here in Florida?
Oh, I think Florida has excellent potential to be the Saudi Arabia in fiber with hemp. We have very unique properties. The fiber crop is the year-round crop. The seed crops are going to be a single season crop. If you go up north, for example, in North Dakota, they have to decide whether they're going to grow food or fiber. So they have to choose. They either grow corn or they might grow hemp. Well, down here in Florida, we get 3 crops, and one of those crops is a cover crop. Well, prices are so bad today that farmers can't grow cover crops, so they get more weeds. They have to use more chemicals in the spring.
What do you mean by cover crop? I'm sorry.
A cover crop holds the land and fights the weeds, and they usually plow it in. It usually puts more nitrogen back into the soil.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Something like a legume, for example. So they're looking for a fiber cover crop that has some money potential for them so that they can it will help fight their weeds. What the crop does, its roots go very deep. So they can go down as far as 2.5 meters.
Hemp does?
Hemp roots.
Uh-huh.
So as a result, it goes down and it recovers the old nutrients that you've been slathering on top for your other veggies. And, you know, your veggies might only go down 6 inches or 12 inches or something.
So 2.5 yards is a long way.
So when you go down deep, you recover what's leaching down into the water supply. So we're actually cleaning up the water supply and we're getting free nutrients. So we bring those back up to the surface. Now, the plant keeps 70% of those nutrients in the canopy, but we only want the stalk for the fiber. So we can leave the leaves on the land, and that puts those nutrients up top where the veggies can get them. So the next rotation of veggies is going to get free fertilizer, and it's going to have less weeds. So you get this economic benefit just from planting a cover crop, and then you get some money back for the stocks.
This sounds pretty much like an ideal situation, but what might impede that path?
Legislation.
Political?
Political.
It's interesting to me that politics enters into the propagation of something that only makes really fiber.
You know, it's ironic, you know, when the tomato plant came in from South America, the Italians said, we're not going to eat that. That's deadly nightshade. And indeed, the tomato plant is the cousin of deadly nightshade, the source of belladonna poisoning. So it's possible for plants to have bad cousins. They just do. But if there had been a
I think we all do. Do we not?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I love my cousins. Thank you very much.
Many of mine are outside of the listening area. So, but it's interesting, you know, like you said, that the Italians, when the tomato first got there, they wouldn't eat it. They actually gave it as like a flowering plant, but that's it.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, if there had been a DEA when Columbus came back, we probably would have a very dull pizza at this point.
Yeah, they would have never had that tomato. So you've been spending time in Tallahassee working on the hemp farming law. Can you tell me a little bit about how that process has gone and where we currently stand?
Well, as Doctor said, we have reached the point where we have a hemp farming bill. It's not as good as states like Kentucky or Colorado. It's a very restrictive bill. But Florida farming is very restrictive. As Dr. Gilbert said, we have this Invasive Species Act that other states don't have. So that makes it very difficult to grow anything. I mean, and you want to bring in any new crop, you're going to have that problem. So we're going to be behind the eight ball. There are now 40 states that have passed this legislation, and about half of them are planting. So
we're kind of a little late to the party.
Well, we're very late to the party. And in fact, we've still got another couple of years before our farmers are going to be growing. So we're going to be very late when we come.
So you also lobby in Washington, D.C., and I understand that there's legislation being co-sponsored by Senators Mitch McConnell and Chuck Schumer that would remove hemp from DEA oversight to USDA. How much of an impact would that have?
Well, that would be enormous because within that, we're hoping to get financial restrictions eliminated. We need millions of dollars. For example, a good seed processing plant would cost $4 million, and a good fiber plant costs $25 million, the way they build them in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
I've developed a way that I think we can do it for much less because of our unique Florida environment, and I'm very excited about to be able to do it, but it's still going to cost a few million dollars to get going. So we need financing, we need insurance, we need just to process a credit card and so forth. Those things are hard to do right now because of cannabis.
Well, you brought in some paperwork here, and it has a picture of an old it looks like an old hemp factory kind of thing at St. James City. Tell mm-hmm. me a little bit about that. We're kind of reinventing the wheel here a little bit. I mean, this used to exist. This was standing in 1912, it says.
Yes, that was a standard kit to make ropes back in 19 – around the turn of the century. It's interesting to note that that is now replaced by a machine the size of this desk.
So it took a factory this big.
Yeah, to make ropes, yeah.
But I'm looking at a picture. It's pretty good sized.
Mm-hmm.
And that was existing in St. James City, but now we're kind of starting over sort of from scratch,
yes.
as the doctor was saying earlier.
Yeah, well, those factories would have existed around most major seaports in America at the time, and it was down here. Actually, it turns out my hempcrete house is only two blocks away from where they grew the hemp for the sponge docks in Tarpon Springs. So they were growing hemp to make the twine, the rope, and the netting, and the anchor line that the spongers were using on their boats.
I'm so excited to hear about the hempcrete. I just want to remind everybody we're talking about industrial hemp on today's show. My guest during this segment is Bob Clayton. He's a retired mechanical engineer and hemp advocate. If you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. So tell me about hempcrete. What is it? How's it made? What are its benefits? Just give me like a overview.
Well, it's also called hemp-lime construction. We use lime because it binds very well with the silica in the hemp. So you get a mineralized fiber that forms up looking a little bit like a cement block, if
okay.
you imagine those.
So you take the hemp fibers, mm-hmm. mix it up with a lime solution?
Mm-hmm. We use lime. It's a much lower carbon. Cement is 5% of the world's carbon dioxide. So if we can get off of cement and onto lime again, like we used to do, we would save a lot of CO2 in the world. Now, we can build our – with this – the advantage of the lime, of course, is that it's fully recyclable. You can grind my house up and till it into the soil, and you would still grow organic vegetables. You would not lose your organic certification. So 22% of your municipal landfill is construction debris. So every month you pay that – you pay $250 a year to empty your garbage. 22% is for the municipal – for the construction.
Construction waste.
Content.
So then you have your lime and your hemp fibers.
Yes.
Do you put it in like a mold form and then let it dry out, or how does that work?
I'm
thinking
pictures
of
there.
Adobe huts here.
You can see what we do is we slip cast the walls. We have forms and we screw them into the studs and then we just pack the material in between it. And after about an hour, you can pop forms and jump up another level and keep on going. The material is 1/7 the weight of cement. As a result, you can skid these things around with your finger and throw buckets up in the air to a guy on a stepladder, and he's stuffing it in the wall. And you just tamp it down with a 2x4 and keep on going. So
How'd your house do during Irma?
We had very little effect from Irma up in Tarpon Springs, so it's not a fair test.
Oh, okay.
It wouldn't have any problems. You have to build the frame of the house to the 175-mile-an-hour standard. We are in the riverine flood standard zone, so we're less than a mile from the water.
How does this withstand flooding? Does moisture and humidity have an impact on it?
What happens is that it will breathe moisture. In fact, the test they did in Scotland on the thing, they played fire hoses on it for 3 days, and the water moved in about an inch or two. You make about a 12-inch thick wall, so you have a very thick piece of insulation there. And then after you stop, it dries out over time. You don't want it standing in water, and after a hurricane, it will shed the water out. But, of course, you're going to flood in any storm, so, I mean, it will tolerate that, but it the water has to go away so it can shed the water out.
Yeah, it has to have time to get rid of it. And do you just paint right over it?
We keep the wall. This is the thing. We want the walls to maintain their permeability so that the water vapor can move through it. This is important so that we don't get the sick building syndrome. I was giving a talk at a convention on hemp, and a guy walked up and said, gee, I just tore down a 35-year-old house with sick building syndrome and built a new house. I wish I'd heard about this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the state of Florida has spent millions of dollars trying to remediate sick building syndrome in its public buildings. So, I mean, this would solve all that problem. The lime fights mold and mildew, and then because it is moving the moisture out, it doesn't encourage the growth. It will grow algae. Algae is a plant, and mold and mildew are a fungi.
Oh, okay, so the fungi won't grow on it.
Fungi don't like it, but algae, like plants like lime, so they do grow on it.
How do you fight that? Are you just let it go and have green walls?
I'm testing a biocide on it. The whole house is actually a test case. I mean, you have to just learn how to do this thing, and we're learning things that we would do very differently in another house another time.
Does it smell different or feel different or anything? Or
yeah, it does take time to get used to that initially. Now, the wet hemp is as caustic as Easy Off oven cleaner.
Caustic like you.
Yeah, so you want to air that house out for a while before you're going to move into it.
So air it out before you move into it. Mm-hmm. But what if you have a spike in humidity? Do you need to have dehumidifiers maybe to keep the humidity out so that the interior walls don't end up absorbing mm-hmm. some of the air moisture?
Well, that's one of the things. You know, Florida has such high humidity. I figured that, you know, it's going to diffuse from the high source to the low source. So I'm always going to be moving humidity into the house. So, and a hempcrete house is actually a very well-sealed house. So you get you get very quiet house and you get high insulation. And I'm R30 insulation, so I have very little air conditioning bill. And in fact, I can usually cool the house with my dehumidifier, which is a small air conditioner when you look at it.
Yeah, essentially.
So I have a dehumidifier up in the attic, and I just crank that up. And that's usually all I need for many parts of the year. In fact, I don't run the air conditioner much until around June.
Yeah, mine's pretty much running all year round.
Yeah, yeah.
So we have a question from Facebook. It looks like Jennifer would like to know, does hempcrete meet code? How do builders feel about this and architects?
Well, the code is the structure that's underneath it. You build a standard timber construction, and you get that inspected. And that has to meet your 175-mile-an-hour standard. The basic idea of the standard is to tie the roof into the slab so that you have to rip the slab away to get the roof off the house. So you want to keep the roof on the house. That's the whole idea of the standards. From there, hempcrete is just cementitious insulating infill, and it's an insulating material. The thing that makes it unique is that it's very hard to get beyond R19 with loose fiber bats. They're going to open up. They're going to compress down. They're going to, you know, the roaches, the rats and lizards are going to get in there, and they're going to rip it up and make their nests and so you're going to have a hard time keeping your insulation over the years with a loose bat insulation. So this is a solid cementitious insulation. And it
okay, so I see what you're
well.
Saying. I was having a hard time following you. So you're talking about regular insulation that's loose that things can get into.
Yeah, and you're familiar with fiberglass.
Yeah. I don't want to touch it. That's the stuff that can kind of be worn away. But when you have something like what you're talking about, it's more solid and more difficult for pests. And do you have any pest issues, or are any animals attracted to this?
Well, you're always going to get Florida bugs.
Well, yeah, you can't escape that.
This is Florida.
Yeah.
So far, I've had I'm able to control what I found with natural means. You know, if I find ants, I can put out cornmeal and stuff like that. That'll kill the ants.
So why are you personally interested in this? Do you kind of try to live a clean lifestyle? Are you into it because of the innovation or because of the cleanness of it?
Well, of course, in 2012, of course, the energy crisis was raging, and I'm saving 90% on my energy bill. So that had a factor in it, if this was going to be good. It looked healthy. I knew Florida. I had just sold off my mother's house, and it had, you know, the old mold and mildew problems that old houses have. And so I like that side of the issue, if we can make healthy houses. And I also knew about this recyclability and how to get to zero landfill and so on and so forth. So if we can do these things, we've got a chance in the 21st century.
It's kind of a combination of factors.
Yeah, it's all those good things. We can't keep building landfills. We can't keep tearing down our houses and things like this.
Do you think it's kind of weird that so many states have legalized the use of psychoactive marijuana for medical and recreational use, and yet we're still fighting to be able to grow hemp for construction uses?
Yeah, isn't that amazing? I mean, this is a vegetable. It makes vegetable protein. It makes vegetable oil and vegetable fiber. And people are terrified of it. I'll give you the example of canola. Most people don't know what it is. It's rapeseed.
Rapeseed, yeah.
And rapeseed has as much as 50% erucic acid, which will kill a cow. So you don't feed rapeseed to animals. So Canada, it grows in a high latitude, and Canada needed plants that grow up there. So they developed Canadian oil low acid canola.
And I love how they had to rename it.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody wanted to
well, there's a lot of controls on it. I mean, yeah. you have to buy only their strain of seed. You have to grow it from buy your seed from certified growers, keep your certificates. You have to inspect your fields, test your crop. So that whole protocol, when you look at that, wait a minute, that's the same protocol that they use on industrial hemp. And indeed, they just copied that over from canola over to industrial hemp. And so that's how they got industrial hemp started in Canada. And essentially, that is the model of what everybody is going to be doing with industrial hemp farming. You'll always have to test for THC. But, I mean, there you've got a crop and it has 2% of a toxin that can kill a cow, and people are feeding it to their grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
But then they're terrified of a plant with 0.3% of a toxin that never killed anybody, and they think that that's going to be the end of the world. We're feeding – actually, if you're familiar with this Charlotte's Web, it's a form of hemp. It's an 8% CBD hemp with 0.8% THC. So it's higher than hemp, and we're feeding that to children to because the CBD fights the epilepsy. And in fact, that was known in 1947, but the DEA did not let people know that.
Yeah, they did tell everybody about reefer madness, right?
Mm-hmm.
Little scare tactic.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask a little bit about your new company called Rewarding Goodness. Tell me about that.
Well, that's our new company, and we're going to start making we're starting with hemp protein bars. To make products from the hemp seed so that people can consume it. Our bar is unique. When you go out and find a hemp bar, you'll find that there's maybe 15% hemp seed in it. Ours is going to be 67% hemp. So the whole idea is so that we can sell Florida's hemp seed when we can grow it. Hemp is an industrial crop. It means nothing to grow it unless you can process it. So we've got to have these companies making things.
So you have to import the seed from somewhere else?
Until we're allowed to grow it, I'm going to have to bring it in from maybe Kentucky or other states.
So there are other states that are already growing and able to sell it.
Kentucky is shipping, Colorado shipping, Oregon shipping. I mean, there are about 16 states out there that are shipping cracked hemp seed right now.
And cracked hemp seed, is that consumed for its fiber, I'm guessing? Am I wrong?
Well, actually,
because we keep talking about fiber, industrial fiber.
yeah, we got to keep these straight. Hemp seed is technically a nut.
Oh, okay.
Anytime you have a seed with a hard pericarp, it's called a nut. So the hemp plant is rather unique. It's a shrubbery that thinks it's a tree. And these have these tiny little seeds that are technically nuts. So we crack the husk off it. Another good example, it's called a machine. And the best example of that is the sunflower seed. You've seen maybe sunflower seeds with this tough woody husk, and mm-hmm. they crack that off. So we take the husk off the seed, and then we crack the pericarp off. So when you're getting cracked seed, we have to do this because we're not allowed to ship germinating seed. We have to render the seed non-germinating. Mm-hmm. And really, that's just because they're afraid that it's a drug. I mean, back in 1952, Harry Anslinger was stopping people from making paper from hemp because one of their products was going to be cigarette paper. And if you were smoking cigarette paper, you would have been smoking cannabis, and he couldn't allow people to smoke cannabis.
There is quite a concern.
So there's strange
among certain
stuff
people
going
about
on.
That.
So we're not allowed to ship germinating seed, and mm-hmm. we crack it.
So you crack it, and then you use it in these nutritional
and
bars?
Then we can put it in the food bars.
All right. Are there any final thoughts that you'd like to share with us on the future of industrial hemp here in Florida and around the country?
Well, it has nowhere to go but up. Right now, last year, we just exceeded Wrigley's Double Mint chewing gum in sales. And if we can triple in size, well, then we can be bigger than all the chewing gum in America. And so I would urge everybody to take the money that you spend on chewing gum and spend it on hemp, and the sidewalks will look a lot better in America.
All right. Well, that's all the time that we have right now. I want to thank my guest, Bob Clayton. He's a retired mechanical engineer and founder of Florida Hemp Processing and a company called Rewarding Goodness. Bob, thanks so much for coming in today. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
When we return, we're going to learn more about Amendment 4, which has been placed on the November ballot by the Constitution Revision Commission. It would change the way that ex-felons get back their right to vote in Florida. This is Gulf Coast Live on WGCU. Stay with us.